Okay.
Excellent. You ready to go?
Absolutely.
All right. So, Blaine, welcome to kind of this episode of Renegade HPG. This is kind of a project that's kind of floated up in my mind to kind of correspond with what I was doing with the paying job. What better thing to take this podcast experience I was doing and kind of leverage it into BattleTech Universe, which is a place I've been kind of living since I was a teenager when I found the novels and dove in and have loved it and kind of back on the back burner a long time for me. And I've been very happy to kind of dive back in these last year and a half, 2 years, and kind of rekindle that love and starting reading through my large novel collection. And had the pleasure to kind of, fortunately I've been going linearly through it, so I haven't gone through most of your books yet, but fortunately I kind of forever faithful, not forever faithful, sorry, your Wolverine book was out of the timeline. So I was like, okay, I want to read this and I won't kind of disrupt the timeline that I've been reading. And had a blast with it. But yeah, and so just for me, I love talking about the creative process and just kind of, getting here and kind of learning about kind of your experience, because kind of been in with this since the beginning and kind of talking about what that's been like and what the process has been like and kind of how watching kind of the evolution of BattleTech from the beginning has kind of, the experience you've gotten along the way and how it's kind of, framed you and your own writing.
Yeah, I love talking about BattleTech. It's a lot of fun. I mean,
Awesome.
it's a hobby that generates a little income, but it generates more fun than anything.
Definitely. And how did you first connect with it? Because I saw that I think your first writing credit is from the original TRO 3025, and then Swords and Sabers, which is kind of, that's early.
Oh,
So
yeah.
how did you find that, make that first connection?
I honestly was trying to write for the Star Trek role-playing game of Fez I had the rights to, and I wrote up a scenario set that they bought, and they said, "We're going to buy this. It's great." And this was before computers. I mean, this was typewritten, And they said, "Hey, but we've got this game called Battle Droids. We're going to send you a copy. We want you to do some writing for it." I was like, "All right, sure." And they sent me a copy of Battle Droids, and after that, it was okay. Let's have you try out for the first tech readout that we had, 3025, and clearly, I made that hurdle, and everything just kind of happened after that. It was one project after another.
And that, I mean, that original, that 3025 readout, I mean, that is beloved by fans, and just going back and reading it and just kind of, it's an amazing kind of piece of writing on its own. And so the work that you guys did, what do you think, was that just kind of lightning in a bottle that all those things come together? Or were there like good, looking back, were there like good direction and structure that helped produce that, good like home run from the start with that book?
Not really. I mean, continuity wasn't a big deal. If you go back to, and I've just been working on Spotlight on Snords Irregulars, and if you go back to some of the stuff I did then, we hadn't really defined even what year Wolf's Dragoons had showed up. So some of the dates are wrong. The years are off in the original Snords book. I mean, so there's just mistakes that were made in those early years. To me, it was kind of a creative time in the universe. We didn't have a lot of canon, so you didn't have that overburden that you had to deal with. Anybody coming in at this point to try to write BattleTech, I almost pity them. There's so much from a historic perspective that you have to be able to digest and get correct and kind of flow through that. I've had a number of people who are new fans of BattleTech, and they're like, "Oh, I want to write it." And I'm like, "Dude, you got to read everything that's happened up to this point, to be able to do that." And they get a little discouraged, but I'm like, "Look, if you're going to do that, you'll be a fantastic writer because you'll have the depth of the universe in your hands." That's not to say even though those of us who are seasoned writers, we make mistakes and occasionally get called out, like, "Okay, wait, that planet isn't quite, in that person's custody at that time." But it's complicated to do this stuff now. It's a lot more tracking and spreadsheets and referencing things that were written 20 years ago or 30 years ago and pulling them up and going, "Okay, did we really say that then? And now how do I make that work now?" There was a lot of stuff from the early eras. We had the ice cartels, we had pirates, we had stuff that just disappeared. they just disappeared.
Now, do you guys have kind of a lore master? Because I know, like, you know, watching like interviews of George R. R. Martin, I can't even imagine keeping track of that universe. But, you know, he's talked about it, kind of, he has these fans that are kind of like hold him accountable, you know, and help keep him on track and make sure that there's no, you know, this horse that this person had was this color and not that color. Like, is there someone in the BattleTech universe that is just like the master that you guys can go to and say, what time did this happen, or where was this unit in this year, or is that something you guys have got to keep track of yourself?
Honestly, there's nobody we get to go to as a librarian for the universe. That doesn't exist. And if I get really stuck, you know, I know where to look, and I, you know, it's kind of like doing your own historical research on history that hasn't actually happened. You know, but you have to do kind of your own background search. There's a level of what they call fact checking that does take place. There's some pros and cons to the fact checkers. I don't have a great reputation with them. So,
oh, no.
Which is fine by me. I'm actually really comfortable with that. Because okay. The fact checkers tend to go, well, this is based on everything we've ever done before, this is what you can do. And my response is, the job of the writer is to push that envelope. So we're not limited by what we've done before. We have the capability to say, that's what we did before, but this, now we know more, now we can expand on that. The fact checkers hate that. So from their standpoint is, if it hasn't happened before, you can't do it. And my reaction is, screw that. You know, my job is to go out past all that crap. So, you know, it there's a tug of war that usually goes along with that. And sometimes they win, sometimes I win.
Yeah. Well, I think there's the corollary in that in business, right? Those are the accountants. You know, there's got to be somebody in there to kind of like just be the rules person. But, you know, if you have only the rules people, you're not going to have any fun stories. You know?
Well, yeah. And, you know, sometimes, and I get it, because you have times where writers have gone off script. The death of Natasha Kerensky, you know, that one comes up all the time. They're like, oh, they killed her by burning her with her jump jets. That's not in the rules. And my whole thing is, well, the rules are the starting point. Fiction goes way past the rules. I didn't like how Natasha died, but the author wasn't bound by the rules to do that. And so we've got a space battle coming up in one of the books. And, you know, I've already heard moans and groans of, you know, well, that's not how space battles work. You know, haven't you got a copy of Battlespace? I'm like, yeah, I do. And it's, you know, 20 years old.
Right.
You know, we haven't had a major space battle since the Battle for Huntress.
Yeah.
Where we've really covered it in any depth. So don't tell me how it works. You know, let me tell you what is feasible and what's realistic, and we kind of go from there. So I use the rules, and I fight out battles sometimes using the rules, but I'm not hidebound by the, I'm not sitting there going, well, in this battle, I've checked off all the armor boxes and internal structure and reflected that accurately. If I did that, the stories would read, he clicked off 6 boxes of armor on the right torso. Yeah, you might as well go to that stupid level. And that's kind of where the fact checkers are, whereas I'm not. So,
well, I think you got to have fun with it. I mean, if Mike Stackpole was going by the rule, you know, he must have loaded dice with the snake eyes that are rolling all the time, because, I mean, that's what's fun.
Now, there are times it's horrible. You get in some of the Dark Ages books, there's stuff people are doing with mechs that are more anime type, you know, right, somersaults and crap like that. And I'm like, no, they don't work that way. But, you know, the Dark Ages had its own set of problems. So, definitely, you know, hopefully we're moving past that this summer, next couple months.
Now, do you find that you're still able to kind of work within that kind of restricted universe almost, you know, do you find a distinct difference between when you're writing kind of within established timelines, where you're writing kind of in the middle of, you know, things that happen later and you know things that happened before, versus let's say now where you guys are doing a lot of writing kind of at the end of the timeline where things are new and they're coming and you don't have to be like, well, I've got to write this accounting for the fact that this is going to be happening 10 years from now.
It factors in. You know, it's a lot harder to write like in the 3025 era, because there was so much material cranked out in the early years around Third Succession War. So you're kind of limited in that realm. But I found there's so, first of all, the universe is so big, there's plenty of places to play. You know, it all depends on the story you want to tell and the characters you want to tell. And there's always a plenty of room to go do this. You know, and I'll give you an example. We have a project coming up where we're, a bunch of us are writing about Solaris 7, which is great. And each one of us is writing in a different era.
Okay.
Not the same characters or anything. We're just looking at different stories in different eras. So, you know, I chose one that was fun, which was the 3145 Dark Ages era, because that's when Clan Wolf has taken over Solaris. And I'm like, that's a story we never told in any source book, and that's got to be kind of cool. The clan's taking over the game world. So how does that play out? And it was a blast. It was a lot of fun. And we never covered it in a source book, but it was there. And then back in my mind, I was like, that's a story that could be fun. That could be a neat story to tell from a few different perspectives. So, yeah, and I enjoyed it. It was a good time to do it. It was a lot of fun.
And where does kind of, for you, the in the creative process, where do the origins come from? Like, in the sense of, do you, when you're trying to come up with a story, do you kind of try to immerse yourself in the BattleTech universe and say, all right, what's happening here, and then what can I do within that? Or are you taking experiences from life and from history and then trying to apply them into the BattleTech universe to kind of hit on a certain theme or convey, you know, a story that you'd like to, you know, that kind of history repeats kind of thing, but in the BattleTech universe?
I've gotten away from doing, you know, and there's a few writers who have said Blaine writes books with heavy plots, you know, and I'm like, no, I don't. I used to look, go, what's the plot that I, you know, what's the story? I focus now more on the characters. And I'm like, what kind of characters do I want to write about? And then I kind of go from there to go, okay, so how does that play out? And it may take me two or three, I just finished a short story today for Shrapnel and I just sent it in. And it, you know, the impetus for it was that I had reread True Grit. Okay. And I said, okay, let's do True Grit in BattleTech, you know? And, yeah. And so that was the start. But, you know, I think most people, when they read it, aren't going to get that connection at all. It's not a lifting of the plot. It's very different in its approach, but that's where I went. So I wrote a first person story in BattleTech, yeah, which is really rare. And it's a very fun little romp, you know, and it was actually, it's one of these things where I'm like, I kind of backed away from it this afternoon going, I think this is one of the fun things I've written because the characters were so cool. Yeah. And people can relate to all of them. You know, they understand these characters. And I think that, to me, that's where I've been going lately, is I want to write about cool characters and the story kind of happens. Sometimes the plot drives a lot of what's there, but you know, if you look at Betrayal of Ideals, which was the Clan Wolverine saga, that's a story of great characters.
Yeah.
Now, everybody knew what the plot was. Everybody knows where this right. is going. It's kind of yeah. like, it's like when you went to the movie Titanic.
Yeah.
You knew what was going to happen, but it was a good film because of the characters and how they were portrayed. That is how a lot of things, when you look at this in BattleTech, yeah, you know what's going to happen on Kentaris. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows there's going to be some bad shit happening. But even if you do that, you could tell a good character story in there. Mm-hmm. And that's where I've been focusing, I'd say, in the last, I don't know, 5 years or so. And I've noticed I seem to be picking up a lot more readers now than I ever did, just because it's, you know, it's not your cookie cutter BattleTech. It's like, I want to identify with the character.
And I think, I mean, I've just seen that just in the kind of my own evolution as I've gotten older, is that, you know, when I was younger, I was kind of more interested in kind of the action and the scenario. And as I've gotten older, you just get that appreciation for people and what drives people and motivations. And so, and certainly the BattleTech, you know, community is aging with the game, and hopefully with the Kickstarter, we're bringing in a lot of new blood. But I think that that's that, you know, I'm sure that's why it's resonating with people, because we've got that, that those people that are interested in that human story. And the I love the fact that Shrapnel's back, and that, you know, the opportunity, I imagine, for you to kind of be able to tell those short stories and to have a medium, you know, a fixed medium within Battletech to kind of just, you know, tell a story that's, you know, a dozen pages and not sit down and have to flesh it out. Are you enjoying that freedom, or is it kind of just all the same? You know, like, you write a story no matter what, whether it's long or short, or it's, you know, are you able to explore new things?
I don't worry about the length anymore. We're doing a lot of novellas and short novels and a few big books. And, you know, like the last one I had come out, which was Divided We Fall, people were like, well, that was too short. And I'm like, no, it's exactly long enough to tell the story of these characters. I don't sit and parse the wording. It's, some of the stories are going to be shorter than others. Some are going to be incredibly long. When Hour of the Wolf comes out, it's massive. I mean, it is, it's a thud. You drop the book on the desk, you're going to know it. But you had to tell the story of the characters and to pull all these disparate plot threads together. You have to have a big book to do that. And there's some things I explored from the character perspective that John and I are still kind of going back and forth on. But, you know, it's part of the fun. It's how you do this. And so I don't worry about the length. I'm glad we have Shrapnel. It's a great vehicle. I'm hoping it'll continue on after the first four committed issues, but, you know, if it doesn't, well, there'll be some other vehicle. Right. It's bound to.
And I feel like it's a testament to kind of the universe that you don't have publishers saying this is the page count that you need to do, that they allow the kind of story to evolve naturally. And I think that most anybody that's been involved with Battletech for a long time understands that it's the universe that is kind of at the core of the Battletech survival and longevity, is the richness of that universe. And so kind of the, you know, having written for other publishers and in other storylines, do you find that Battletech is particularly good at kind of enabling you guys to kind of maximize your creativity in that process?
You gotta understand, and I'll give you I think people don't, they think we have kind of carte blanche to do whatever we want. Mm-hmm. We had a writer's summit in September, and, you know, they brought together a large group of us to kind of talk about what are we going to do for the next 3 years. Some of that required me to do some rewriting of Hour of the Wolf and to write some additional projects. Then there's the, okay, so once we know what's happening with Ill Clan, where do we go from here? And there's 2 years worth of products that are laid out on the board. And we assigned those. So it's like, who wants to tackle that one? Who wants to try this one? And some years I'm going to be writing more than others, but I also kind of count on the fact that now that I've retired from my professional life and I write full time, you know, if there's a gap and somebody isn't doing their part, I could always jump in and go, yeah, I can crank out a book in like 2 weeks. So it really works out well, you know, from my perspective, and it's kind of fun that way. So we have kind of, let's say, a 3-year arc of where the stories are going to go. And knowing that and knowing what other books are happening and when they're happening, timeline in the universe, you know, you kind of go from there. Now, I have complete carte blanche when it comes to the book that I write. You know, so I'm committed. You know, I have a one-liner on the board that says, you know, Lyran book, what's happening? You know, okay, well, that's okay. That's my, I got a clean slate to go play that. And yeah, so I have things in mind that I'm doing. I'll put together an outline, send it over to the editor, which I've done. John will go through it when he gets a chance and say, here's what to add, here's what to change, I like this, I don't like that. We have discussions about it. You know, it's a good creative process with the editor to be able to go through and do those types of things. And then after that, it's, hey, go write the damn book. You know, and that's what I do. So it's kind of fun. Honestly, it's a lot of fun to do it that way. And this is a pattern we've had from going back to the FASA days. We would have writer summits, get together, figure out, okay, where are we going with this? And some of the stuff we would argue about was just plain stupid. You know, it's everybody's got a creative thing in their head, you know, and they think they're more creative than others. So, you know, it doesn't, you don't necessarily win or lose, but you gather everybody's input, kind of go, how am I going to make all that work? And it works out pretty good. Mike and I and Lauren and Randall have been around probably the longest for those. I think Mike and Mike probably has beat me on the number of summits that he's been to.
Gotcha.
But I'm pretty close at this point.
Liz, you know, in terms of, is that, you know, how much in those summits are you guys kind of creating everything versus, you know, the publishers, you know, or the creative directive team saying, okay, this is the outline and let's go? Or is it completely, is everybody in that group kind of throwing out ideas at those summits? You know,
it's a free for all.
Okay.
It is 100% free for all. It's a very collaborative process.
That's awesome.
And some of it is technical. So it's like, okay, so how does Fortress Republic work? We spent, I think, 3 hours arguing about how it could work, how it should work, what's going to make a better story, things along those lines. So some of it is very technical. It doesn't have to do with the story. It has to do with, this is how that technology should work. This is its limitations, things like that, because we don't want players picking up some of the tools that we have and playing with it in their own scenarios. That's bad. So we have to kind of spec that stuff out. Then we'll go, okay, so what's the real story behind the story? We all know that X event is happening. So what does that mean? How does that play out? What's that going to be like when that happens? What's things going to do? And we brainstorm ideas and throw them up on a wall and easel pads, and there's a little alcohol that flows, and it's intense. I mean, we start at like 9 a.m. and we will go till 10 or 11 or midnight at night, and we're going to dinner together, to lunch together, to breakfast. But it's well worth it. It's a very collaborative thing, and it's fun.
And has it been like that since the beginning, or has it evolved to that point, you know, back in, you know?
There have been times where it was brutal. I mean, you know, there's been a couple incidents in the past where writers did not agree with each other, and to the point where somebody had to kind of step in and go, okay, but this is what we're going to do. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, that was bad. So, I mean, you know, some of the summits are shorter. We used to do them in like 5 hours at a Gen Con. We would sit around a hotel room and everybody would crash, you know, in various places, or we'd be at a breakfast table and just stay there and, you know, kind of hammer through the stuff. So some of them are very short, some are very long. I think the longer ones are better because it gives people time to go, let's go back to that idea we talked about 2 days ago. Does it still make sense now that we've talked through all this other stuff? You know, I think the longer periods of time work much better. So I think the fans think it's a lot more entertaining than it is, but it's a lot of us arguing about Battletech stuff.
Which is what most of us love doing, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, but our arguments actually count, so.
Can you, are you allowed to give us kind of a little sneak into a direction that could have been, but that wasn't, that would kind of make people go, ooh?
I published some in my blog. We had what Bill Keith had originally projected for how like the Twilight of the Clans would go down. It was very different than what the final product was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were a lot of changes you'll see out of Summit. And I've been kind of culling my archives and posting it up on my blog, just so people could go, okay, you know, in the original, it wasn't Morgan that was killed on the way to Huntress. It was actually Anastasius Foch that was killed. And, you know, decisions were made later where it was like, you know what, let's keep him around because we can use him for some other stuff down the road. So you can see the evolution in some of that stuff. For the future stuff now, I'm sworn to secrecy.
Of course.
Mostly because I live this stuff. So,
right. And now, how did you transition from kind of contributing on the sourcebook side to the novels, you know, with Highlander? I think Highlander Gambit was your first novel, correct? And did you contribute to Star-Lord? Did I read that right somewhere that you had kind of?
Yeah, I did, but that was horrible. So yeah, what I did, what we used to do every year as a Gen Con, we had what I used to call gravel for a novel. So you'd go through the writer's thing, and then you could come in with a bunch of pitches and go, okay, we're doing the FinCom Civil War in the next 2 years. Here's three ideas I have for that. And I went through probably 2 years or 3 years of doing the gravel for a novel, and I got shot down every time. So when I went in with Highlander Gambit, it was actually my third pitch, and I really didn't put any effort into it. It was kind of like Northwind Highlanders are lured, you know, to House Lao by a death commando. That was like the entire, everything else I wrote up these long detailed pitches. And I went in, so I got three pitches, and I went through the first one, and I'm like, nah. Second one, they were like, nah. And I said, well, I got this third one, but I haven't done much on it. Here's what it is. It's like three sentences. And they're like, that's the one.
Well, there, I mean, you learned the trick, right? You were given, you were telling them what you were going to do. The trick is don't tell them what you're going to do.
Right. Right. Yeah, right. So yeah, I went and did that. Star-Lord was, I got a call from the editor going, this book had been written by a friend of the Wiseman family. And they said, we've got this book, and it's a hot, steaming mess. And we need to be able to get it over to Rock, who is the publisher at the time, in like 2 weeks. Can you just take it and do whatever you can do in 2 weeks to fix this? And yeah, I use the phrase unfuck, but that's really what it was. So, you know, I had to work within the parameters of the established outline for the book. I couldn't just throw it away because I had 2 weeks and I was working full time at the time. So I'm trying to fit this in on weekends at nights to get it done. I fixed the most egregious problems, and there were so many of them. but I contributed to it. The book, a lot of people don't like it. There's parts of the book I completely understand why they don't like, but there's parts of the story itself that are kind of interesting. So hopefully it'll pass into memory.
Now, I can't remember where I heard this. It's probably an urban legend, but are there ever times where you guys play out something, you know, you don't know what's going to happen in a battle or whatnot. You play it out on tabletop, and what happens on the tabletop gets written into narrative.
Some people do that more than others. I for the story I was doing this weekend, I printed out the record sheets. Mostly make sure if you're blowing up the right arm, you want to know what's in the right arm, and make sure that the amount of firepower you dump in there is enough to blow up the right arm. You know, in fiction, however, you don't just hit an arm. Damage is going to spread, you know, because the game is only a facsimile of real life, right, you know, right. Just stuff. So yeah, I will say I use the rules. It's rare that I will fight out an entire battle. I might fight out a scene, you know, and go, if I put these two mechs together, how do they actually play a little bit so I can get a better feel for, oh wait, I would be jumping here, you know, and I'll incorporate that in. I think different writers use it more, you know. I would never write it by saying, roll the dice and whatever came up on the dice, that's what happened. You know, because I kind of know who I want to win a battle beforehand. And right. The dice are, they're cruel bitches.
Yeah. Well, no way Natasha Kerensky would have survived as long as she did on a tabletop.
Right,
I think.
Right. You know, and Battletech's about big characters. So.
Are there things within the BattleTech? Are there like rules in the BattleTech universe that are like this happens in the BattleTech and not anywhere else that you guys follow? And I'm thinking about an example of like in the Star Wars universe, there's no shoelaces. You know, it's like it's a Lucas thing. Like it's just boots. This. Are there like little like quirky, you know, things that you guys kind of are aware of that you write about that are like this just doesn't happen in BattleTech. Don't write about it. It's first
aliens. Aliens.
Just aliens.
Hands down. It's yeah. like, and it comes up every so often. There's some fan going, well, the solution to everything about tech is we need aliens. And the answer is no, we don't.
Well, it surprised me just the plethora of life in general in the BattleTech universe of animal life and whatnot. But I suppose that's all been taken by settlers, you know, and then evolved over time. But
there's not a lot of rules that we can't, you know, that we're kind of hidebound to. And there's certain things where we have conscious decisions about, we're not going to talk about this faction or these factions or whatever during this time period, that, you know, we're kind of going to leave a little bit of a mystery out there for them.
Now, are there plans to kind of explore and get novels in the periphery a lot more? Cause I kind of have this explorer's heart of kind of what's on the border, and it doesn't get written about as much as I would like. So I don't know if that's something for the future, or if you guys are just, there's so much going on in the.
John's actually got a project that I'm kind of waiting for him to kind of set the parameters to. It's very similar to what we've done with Solaris, where it's a periphery book by five or six of the authors, and we're each writing a story in a different era out in the periphery. I just did a story for the Kickstarter, Redemption and Malice, that's purely periphery, you know, that is so much fun. And so it's a great place to play because it's the Wild West and anything goes in the periphery. You could do whatever you want out in the periphery. There's a lot more freedom to it. The problem is, you know, if we start really concentrating on the periphery, what people love about BattleTech is the grand political stuff. You know, it's Game of Thrones before we had Game of Thrones. So it's the grand politics and the battles, you know, for the fate of the inner sphere. The periphery is the periphery, you know. It's as Jordan used to say, but the periphery is where technology goes to die, you know, and I always liked that. It does make it interesting. So we're doing a lot more with periphery, I think, and I think John's got a project that's coming that it's going to be a whole kind of anthology of stuff that's just periphery based. So awesome. We'll get some of those fun stories I think you like.
Yeah, cool. Change of direction, you know, thoughts on the art of BattleTech and how it kind of influenced books. And one thing that always kind of piqued my interest is kind of just, it seems like there's a disconnect, right? Because the publisher is in charge of the art of your books. Do the authors have any kind of say on terms of what makes it on there and what are your thoughts kind of on kind of what happens? Because I mean, you know, BattleTech's gone through some good and bad cover art for books before. Unfortunately, it's in a great place now. You know, the guys are doing a good job. But yeah, was there frustrations that you do? You have a favorite kind of, you know, made one of your books?
You know, I love the Timberwolf that's on Forever Faithful. Yeah, and I, you know, Anthony did such an outstanding job with that. It used to be we had no input whatsoever. So we would see a cover of a book around the same time the fans did. Okay. That's always been a problem. I mean, there are times books have been released, and this is even recently, the book will get released. I didn't even know it was going to be released. Yeah, I didn't know the date yet. I knew it was coming, but the next thing you know, it's like fans are pinging you going, hey, this book's really good. And you're like, it's out? Oh, okay. Wow. You know, like I got my author's copies of Divide We Fall like 4 weeks after the fans did, the hard copy. It just, things like that happen. It's almost like a FASA / BattleTech tradition that like you're not going to get those things. So don't ask. John's real good. If you ask, he'll send them to you, but you gotta ask kind of thing. Right. Covers, we never got input to until the last 3 years. I got to input the cover they said, what scene do you want to use for Forever Faithful? And I said, this is your scene. Boom.
Awesome.
And they even let me communicate with the author because Anthony originally had those blue marks on there, and I said, well, if you read it, they're blue but they're outlined in white, and he went through and made the change like in an hour. The guy's like, freaking god.
Yeah.
The last I got to pick the cover for Divide We Fall, Rock of the Republic I've picked, and I've seen it's so cool. And I've also picked the cover for Hour of the Wolf and the book that will happen in the middle of those two. And it's great because, you know, that they'll send us, here's draft one, you know, what do you think? And we get to actually have input on it. And I prefer having that input. And sometimes it's just because I want to be deliberately deceptive with the cover. I want them to see something on the cover and they're going to go, oh my God, that faction's in there. It's like, yeah, they're in there for a chapter, but it's okay. You know, but I want to whip the fans up on, okay, there's a bigger universe in play here.
Yeah, that reminds me. I haven't caught back up to DRT in my reading. I don't even know if I want to, based on what I remember. But I remember reading that as a kid, and I was like, oh, that's a cool picture on the front, and reading through it and being like, when does this happen? When does this happen? And if I remember correctly, it never happened. I finished, I was like, huh, what? You know, where did that come from?
Yeah, sometimes so, I was even left kind of going, really? That's what they thought? But they, you know, some of them were perfect. I mean, I think Impetus of War is a great cover, the original. Some of them I just look at and go, you didn't get the paint scheme right at all. And that's something I'm doing now too. I'm really taking a very conscientious effort to make sure that I put in the paint schemes for almost everything you're going to see, because I've realized now that the minute I do that, fans are out buying all these freaking mechs and painting them up. Definitely. And that's been a big change for me is I specify this is what the colors look like, because people want that. They want it and they want to play it that way and paint it. And they want to hold the little miniature. And even with the design of the mechs, if you look at the one on the cover of Divide We Fall, you know, in the book, I described it and that was given to the artist. And then the art director worked with the artist. And I mean, he captured it. That's what it looked like.
Good looking.
So
the and I fun. Think I think I had seen on the one of the Facebook groups that you had picked up. You were getting back into painting miniatures. Is that did I remember that correctly? Is that are we getting back in? Awesome.
Yes.
Very cool.
Nice tiger stripe pattern.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. I am. I'm having a lot of fun. I'm playing a lot more.
Yeah.
The Mega Mech's great because I have to putz with all the math. The math kills battle deck, you know.
Yeah.
It's 6+4-2 and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, just let me do it. So I've been playing Mega Mech a little bit more because you just kind of aim, click, and it does all the math for you, which is great. But I've been playing some tabletop too.
Awesome.
So I've actually been enjoying it. I really enjoy Alpha Strike because you can field an army. Mm-hmm. Whereas Battletech, you get beyond Lance versus Lance, you got to carve out a day or two.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but with Alpha Strike, you can throw a bunch of units on the table and blow stuff up pretty quick.
Right. Yeah. I dove into the miniatures. I'd wanted to paint for years and years. I mean, since I was a teenager and then, but I was, I'm the definition of kind of perfection as the enemy of progress. And I was like, oh, well, I want it to look great. I don't want to go through that initial stage and my hand shakes. And then finally I was like, I'm doing it. And then I realized that, you know, you just got to hold your hand steady and it will actually not shake, right. You know, if you take the time to do it, but I've been having a blast with it, but,
I've been painting a lot of miniatures. It's very therapeutic. You know, it's, you sit down and you paint them and, you know, I don't use them all. You know, and stuff. So sometimes I'll just like somebody's doing a tournament somewhere. I'll like, here, you can give this away as a prize type thing.
Right.
Yeah. That's easy to do.
I was listening to some of the other podcasts that you had done with Wolfnik because I want to make sure I wasn't duplicating too much of it. And you had said something there that, I loved of your house rule for speed tech. And I just want to bring that up because I think it's amazing. And I've been kind of wanting to do that forever because when I sit there and I catch myself thinking for 2 minutes about what direction I want to move or someone else's. I'm like, this isn't how it would happen. You know, it's like, you got to make this decision in 10 seconds and go.
Well, the thing about BattleTech that always drives you nuts when you play a tournament is BattleTech's a game that simulates 2 minutes of battle in 6 hours.
Yeah.
Totally. You know, and realistically, it's just, it's a hot, steamy mess. And so what we did is we set up rules going, you get 30 seconds to figure out what your move is. Because in real life, you wouldn't be sitting there going, well, can I get over there? 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 And they, you know, people are moving out and trying to move. No, 30 seconds, pick your move.
Yeah.
And literally you have to declare your shots in those moves too, which allows you to accidentally overheat because you say, well, I'm going to fire all these weapons. Okay, right. Well, you're firing all these weapons.
Yeah.
Well, wait. Now I want to back it off. I just noticed I'm already running high. No. You already declared. Because in real life, I mean, if you play the online stuff like MechWarrior Online, which I do, you will overheat because you're like, I'm in the middle of a fight. Fire everything. Yeah, right. And that's what overheating was. Yeah. And it does allow you to kind of play those things out. So set a 30-second rule, and it makes the game happen.
Awesome.
Because the only thing that then takes time is figuring out the math.
Right. Now, when you're moving, do you actually move, or do you say, this is the hex I'm trying to get to, and then if it turns out you can't get all the way there and you just have to stop, you know?
We haven't done that, but I like it. I like that as a concept because it's like, well, I'm going to go there. Okay, well, get as far as you can.
It'll take you 2 turns. You know, you'll get there.
Yeah. You're 1 short. Now you're in a field of fire or somebody. Yeah, right, but how real life would be.
Exactly.
You know, so we've done that, and it makes BattleTech go a lot faster. And you make stupid mistakes, and it's fun. And that's what the game's about, is having fun.
Awesome. Now, I want to do a half little fan service here, and maybe this might serve you as well, but we have the Kickstarter, and the Kickstarter took off. We're all, you know, happy about that. But there's the character building aspect to it. And so I'm sure you get kind of lots of kind of questions about that, and people, and you have been incredibly generous in terms of helping, you know, putting characters from the community in there. And I think that, you know, they love you for it, you know, but, or maybe don't love you for it.
Depends on the character they get.
But right. But for kind of a PSA to them, you know, as the author, you know, what are kind of some suggestions that you can give them to kind of like make that job easier for you? You know, if they want it to get into a source book, all right, like, you know, what can they do to kind of help that process for you to be like, okay, yeah, this is somebody I want to write about, or I want to plug in, or and things of like, you know, don't give me a 3-page story arc because I'm not going to flesh out your novel idea.
That's a good starting point. Some of these guys have written up, and I say guys, there's quite a few females, surprisingly, are playing BattleTech now, and they write up stuff that, yeah, well, I was, you know, in a House Karita desk unit, but then my dad was killed, and then I went over and did this, then I went over and did this, and I'm like, yeah, I just need a name.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I would say if you're a clan character, don't give me some last name that isn't a blood name for that clan, which, you know, you get guys going Bob Smith, Khan, Jade Falcon.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't do that. There are no Smith blood names in the Jade Falcons. And, you know, so you start, it just makes it so that I go, look, I can't use that character, and I'm not going to use that character. Mm-hmm. I like the background stories, they're cute. I enjoy those things. I'm not hidebound to that. You know, and if you've come up with some complicated, convoluted, freaking, you know, I know it's your character and you really want it. The problem is I've ruled out some folks just because their backstory is so bad that I'm worried that when they see their character in print, they're going to go, well, that's not the backstory I wanted. You know, so I found it's easier to use people who go, I don't care what clan I'm in. You know, his name's Rufus, you know, and he's a warrior, and I don't care what he pilots, you know, and the less they give us, the more we can go, oh, well, that's a character I can actually take and go do stuff with. Right. And I mix in a lot. I use a lot of the Kickstarter folks, but the problem has been too, they go in and cancel their characters. So from, you know, it takes 3 or 4 months for the edit process. So I've had some where they've canceled their characters after I've included them.
Oh, no.
Or they go in and change their character. They're like, oh, wow, I decided she has to have pink hair. Oh, Jesus Christ. You know. Now I got to, and there's not a good mechanism for me to go, oh, somebody went in and tweaked their character. You know, and there's been a couple where I've been, you know what? These guys are being so freaking weird with what they're doing. I cut their character out and used somebody else's name entirely. So it just, it's one of those things that you just, as you're going through it, you go, the simpler actually is the best way to go. But everybody's got this, there's so many fallen nobles in the spreadsheet. It's like, he was the son of a noble house, but then blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh my God, it's a little heavy. But, you know, I get it because they're like, hey, this is my big shot. And that doesn't mean their characters won't be used. Somebody else may be able to use them. For me, I'm looking for a name that I have an idea for a character already. I don't need help creating a character. I already have an idea for a character. I need a name to attach to that. So that for me makes it a little bit easier. That said, I have actually used, just recently I used a character and their tagline was really good. So, you know, their famous quote that I actually was able to incorporate because it's like that fits for that character. So I, you know, you got to balance those things out. Right now, I think I've used more fans and books than anybody at this point, and it's been a challenge. It has been a challenge.
I'm sure they appreciate it.
Well, we'll see.
Well, you know, going back, you know, we talked about kind of, you know, a lot of pitches, certainly in the early days, you know, before Highlander Gambit that you put out. You know, can you tell us maybe a little story that didn't get told that you really wanted to? Maybe like, you know, Blaine's fanfic that may have gone an alternate timeline or something that you thought was cool that just didn't come to be, or you lost the Bachal, you know, in the collaborative process.
You know, I don't keep track of them that way, because if they get shut aside, I'm like, oh well, they're shut aside, go do something else. I struggled with the whole Jihad, you know, period. That's just not my favorite era. And that makes it always a little tricky. So, you know, that's one era I don't do a lot of writing in, and there's a lot of reasons for it. So, you know, I always thought it would be interesting to tell, and I started doing this in Battlecore, but I really think it'd be cool to do a whole story of someone in the Word of Blake, where they were, how they became a part of it, why they believed in it, you know, to make it more than this cardboard faction that everybody hated. You know, and they had a lot of people fighting for them. So how did they get people to do that? You know, and because they must have been doing some things to enlist those people.
Yeah. And it looked like in Scrapnel that they had a little short where they were talking about kind of the veterans kind of stories and that. So maybe they're kind of trying to give that perspective.
Yeah. I think it would be fun to do something where you see the Word of Blake and they're not hideously evil, you know, that they're, you know, while their leadership is obviously screwed up, you know, it's like they had to have been doing something right because they fielded this massive freaking military in a relatively quick period of time. Right. So how did they pull that off? And on a personal or character level would be fun to explore, I think. But that's something I've had tucked away for a long time. I really wanted to get into that, but I'm kind of holding off. There's so much going on right now that, and you know, I've always thought it would be great to tell some stories from the whole Kerensky era. I mean, really tell some stories about, you know, the Operation Liberation and, you know, that whole, because what was it really like? Because we've gotten all this source book fluff for it, but I'm like, the stories are really good. And I don't want to tell General Kerensky's story. I thought, and a fan and I were batting this around not too long ago. I thought it would be interesting to tell Amaris's story.
Ooh, okay.
Now, and I've come up with a way to do it, but I haven't pitched it yet. It's one of those things where I've got in the back of my mind that could be fun to do. And this fan suggested it to me. He said, wouldn't it be interesting to see his side of this thing? So I'm like, I started thinking about it. I was like, damn, that would be fun.
Yeah.
You know, because he's one of those cardboardy slash villains.
Right.
And it's like, they're not. What if he's not? What if there's some depth to him?
Yeah.
What if there's, and so I've been exploring that a little bit just to kind of go, how would I do it? So
interesting.
We'll see.
Well, you've got experience with the Wolverines, you know, and so you can
you
can weather the fan feedback. You've got it. You've got the skin is thickened, you know, you're ready.
Yeah. After the Wolverine stuff, I think that's how I ended up doing the Ilklan novel. Is it's like, oh, somebody, look, he's stupid enough to try something like that. Yeah, the Wolverine stuff was hilarious because the fan community was split right down the middle. There, you know, half of them were screaming retcon. The other half said, "I knew it. I knew Nicholas Kurnsky was an asshole." I'm like, history is always written by the victors. So that's the subtext of all of that is history is written by the victors. And, you know, Wolverines have always been made out to be, I'm wearing my Wolverine shirt right now.
Awesome.
I mean, I'm a big supporter of that clan. So. Yeah.
Well, looking, you know, from your reading and all the other stories, you know, are there any moment, like favorite moments, you know, key moments in the novels and the lore that have kind of that other authors have done that just kind of stand out as your favorite, being like that you were just sitting there riveted, like with that big, you know, on your face, like, can't believe they did that, you know, that kind of stand out to you?
It's a call out to Stackpole because there's two there, and there's one with Bob Sherritt. When Bob Sherritt had Jamie Wolf throw down the swords. Mm. Yeah, you know, Tetsamo, and said, you know, you caused the death of this, you know, in front of Takashi Kurita. Great scene. Loved it. I loved Bill Keith when he was refighting the Battle of Gettysburg using battle mechs with Jamie Wolf and Greg Carlisle. Loved that concept. Yeah. Thought it was cool. I'm still waiting for somebody to do it at a convention. Mike has two that resonate with me. One was when Wolves Dragoons is explaining to the leaders of the Inner Sphere, and they're like, we're not Wolves Dragoons, we are the Wolf Dragoons.
Oh boy. Yeah.
You know, that moment of, ah, shit. The other, and it's so funny because it's not a battle scene or anything, but I think it was the most brilliant piece of writing was when Hans Davian's wedding is going on, and you've got all the plates with the worlds on them, and Max Lau is like, oh my God, these are the worlds of the Capella Confederation. Yeah. And he starts gathering up the plates, like thinking they're military intelligence. Yeah. And I thought that was like a brilliant, I mean, it told you everything you needed to know about that character without telling you anything about that character. You know, like it was great because only Hans Davian would do that. I give you as our wedding gift the compelling confederation, you know.
Yeah, it's no, like, it's oh,
it was great. I enjoyed that. I thought they were really fun times. Yeah, you know, we haven't seen a lot of that, I would say, in the Dark Ages stuff. We haven't had those kind of big moments yet. So hopefully we'll get some of those in soon.
Awesome. Yeah, I remember, I forget which book it was, but the revelation where the Wolves Dragoons suddenly kind of drop the pretense and they just have their clan ceremony, you know, and then I forgot the character that was in there, and he's just looking around like, what's happening? And like, you know, Natasha, you know, Jamie, they're full in, you know, their clan for that moment, you know, in their secret ceremony, and you're like, ooh.
That's Wolves on the Border, and they're using, that's the first use of the word Selah and all that. And they're like, I just reread that not too long ago because I was working on a Dragoons book, and it's like, wow, that's powerful mojo. Yeah. I mean, that was, you know, and what people don't realize is us authors, we have so many of those threads out there that we go to. And I've been burying a lot of Easter eggs and stuff in stories too. So there's just there's stuff that fans get. Some of them get it, and there's some that still haven't been found yet. So you know, we're, or at least if they've been found, nobody said, "Hey, is this one of these?" So it's a lot more fun now.
Awesome. Yeah, Wolves Dragoons is—I can't believe I didn't remember it was in there. But yeah, you know, I wish we had gotten more from you know Robert Charette. So he did some great work in BattleTech.
When some of the best books, and they hold the test of time perfect.
They do. Yeah.
Some of the BattleTech books, when you go back and read them, it's like I really enjoyed this in the 80s.
Yeah.
But now I'm not enjoying it as much. Yeah. So.
And, you know, going back, you know, do you have any stories kind of in terms of kind of how the clans emerged kind of as a thematic story and kind of what the background was in telling those original and introducing them to kind of the universe? I know you weren't writing the novels, but you're definitely in the source books in there, you know, even the clan source books. So I don't know if you were kind of involved in the process or you kind of knew it was coming or what the creative process was like in terms of introducing that to BattleTech.
We actually had kind of, we were given some bullet points to work off of, mm-hmm. but like when I worked on the Clan Wolf source book, it was, we had, I'll give you a good example. You have an unnamed clan. That was the bullet point. So it was like, okay, well, so from there, I just decided to create this backstory of who they were. And the reason they're Wolverines is I lived in Michigan. So it was University of Michigan Wolverines.
Right.
It was that simple.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it's, we weren't given a lot to do there. There were a few things, you know, from an outline perspective in the bullet points that were like, okay, there's Pentagon Civil War, Nicholas forms the clans and stuff, and you know, so we kind of fleshed it out from there. And I think Boy Pearson did part of the book and I did part of it, and it just kind of came together. So you know, some of that early era stuff though is fun to go back to.
Yeah,
I've recently done a Clan Coyote story that's back in the beginning of the golden age of the clans. And it's like, it's great to go back there because it's like, how many Clan Coyote stories have we had? Zero. Yeah. So let's tell their story a little bit and tell some other stories from that era. And there's been some really great opportunities to explore that stuff recently. I'm glad they're not locking us in and going, look, we're only going to create fiction moving the timeline forward. We're still able to write some stuff that's in the past. And I think that's real important.
Well, I mean, your comment about writing about back in the, you know, the fall of the Star Lake, I think that would be awesome. I think that there's so much amazing material there. And just the scale of it, you know, just thinking, I mean, and TechStocks does a wonderful job with their channel and kind of them talking about the you know, the fall of the Star League. I mean, there's so much amazing stories there. I would love, you know, if there was some kind of rewinds to go back and talk about those. Because, I mean, it's hard to even imagine kind of what a battle is like with when you got warships, multiple warships. And I think about, had I pursued the military, of the difference between being, you know, a Marine versus a naval officer, and just kind of that, the sense of kind of helplessness of being kind of on a ship, you know, where you don't have direct control. Like I was like, I'd rather, you know, be in the line of fire as a Marine, because at least I can control my destiny, and kind of thinking about kind of warship battles and just being sitting in a waiting for your drop ship to maybe make it to the plane or not. It's interesting. You know, we haven't explored it in BattleTech. It's cool.
Actually, I'm doing it in the upcoming book where we're doing the O-Clan, because when one of the invading forces arrives, there's a great scene on the bridge of the ship where the Admiral goes, "You might as well go down below. You're in the way now." Like, we're firing up here. Your leadership capabilities aren't helping here. Right. Go somewhere else, mm-hmm. type thing. And it was a very deliberate scene for that very reason. Is, yeah, you're the leader. You're a con, but I'm fighting this battle. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm here to do. Is this thing, and you're not helping.
Right.
Yeah. You know? And it's interesting because it's a great character exploration. You know, because the clans are a real funky thing to write about. It's might makes right, and that isn't always the best way society works. It just doesn't work at all that way. Mm-hmm. And the clans, that's everything. And sometimes might is wrong.
Right.
Yeah. So it's interesting to play with the clan characters.
What do you guys, you know, when you guys are writing it and when you're thinking, you know, one of the things that I always think about, you know, and I think I just need to kind of, you know, forget it, is kind of the idea of planetary logistics and, you know, how many mechs it takes to defend a planet. You know, is that something you guys kind of chuckle at? You know, it's like, you know, a company, can you imagine 12 mechs defending, you know, a planet like Earth from invaders? And, you know, there's other sides of the planet and other continents. You know, is that something you guys just kind of, you've got to just be like, all right, we can't think about that. We have to just move on. Or is it something that you guys kind of joke about in the background or plan
with? We have to address it. And I've had I've spent a lot of time doing it and recently, because you have to make it so it's plausible for the reader. So you have to address it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the example I used with another writer, he was going, well, but we could do this. And I said, remember, Osama bin Laden hid for 9 years on Earth, and he never left this tiny little region. You know, so planets are big places. There's a lot of places people can go, and a lot of places battles can be fought.
And lost tech can be hidden, you know, so you can take advantage of it.
Yeah, because it was like, oh, well, thank you. We'll find him right away. No, you won't. It's going to take forever, you know. Yeah. And you kind of have to step back and explain some of that. And sometimes I do it. I have a great scene in an upcoming book where I use a risk analogy. The assumption being risk is still played in the 32nd century, but, you know, it's like, let's give an analogy here that makes sense for a reader. And I use a risk analogy because it came up in one of our conversations. Talking, I was like, fine, I'll just stick it in. And that's how it's going to click with the reader. They're going to go, oh, now I get it. You know? So
now,
yeah, you could play with it. We have to deal with it. Logistically, I got to account for my, and we were having arguments about loss projections with one of the fact checkers. He's like, no, they'd be down 40%. Well, no, they would, you know, and this is why. And, you know, you're blowing this, you know, these losses out of proportion. And here's how I'm mitigating those losses logistically. And here's what I've done, you know, so back off on that. We're not at 40%. So, yeah, we have those types of discussions. So it's actually a thing. So,
now, is there kind of like a biggest pet peeve that you have, Battletech Universe, that kind of, you know, makes you, you know, your skin crawl and you're like, oh, I got to deal with this again, you know, or something's going on here?
Not really. I didn't enjoy the Jihad era because it wasn't fiction driven. Mm. It was driven by source books, and a source book would come out and say this unit's been destroyed. We spent decades building some of these characters, some of these units, and they were killed off in a line or two in a source book. And I had a real problem with that. To me, it was a big disservice to our fans. If you're going to kill off a major character, you have to give them a good death scene. Is now my new rule. So like when I wrote the Anvil a couple of years ago, where we talk about the death of, you know, the leader of the Stormhammers, Jossic, I gave him not only a good death scene, but an epic funeral scene, you know? And that was respectful to the fans that enjoyed that faction. That was what they deserved. They didn't deserve him just dying. You know, they deserved him dying epically. And it fires you up when you read it, because you're like, oh man, I'm there, you know? And I think that's kind of part of it, is we've just got to be respectful to the fan community. We can't just lop off a faction here and there and say it's okay. We have to be very careful about the fans and the impact to them, because some of them are going to be pretty pissed. No matter what you do, 15% of the fans hate what you've done. That's just the nature of this. It's a huge franchise. Mm-hmm. And 15% are vocal. They go on the internet and they're like, this sucks. I hate this. I never liked any of this anyway, blah, blah, blah. You have to move past that. So I just embrace the fans that want to have a good time with us, because that's all this is. We're all having a good time. And don't worry, if you don't like how things are, it'll change over time. It's BattleTech.
Definitely. You know, where do you kind of, what are some authors that kind of, you know, helped define your own style and helped kind of inspire you, you know, to pursue this, you know, I'd say part career, but, you know, now full career, you know, and.
I love Bob Sherratt's work. I mean, mm-hmm. His stuff was so solid around the characters, and you really enjoyed the Dragoons, you know, and that was fun. Stackpole stuff always was just fun to do. And I like the early Bill Keith stuff. Mike and I had a discussion about it, and yeah, there's things he likes and things he doesn't like about it, but I liked it because it was a great entry point for BattleTech. And I think that's been something that it has been kind of an inspiration for me on some of the newer books, especially. I want people to be able to pick them up and say, I don't want to tell people, you got to go read 35 other books so that you'll understand where we're at here.
Right.
I want people to be able to pick it up and go, I don't know what's going on, but by the time they're done, they're like, I got a pretty good idea what's going on. Yeah. You know, like I didn't need that entry point. And that's a little bit tricky to do right now, but I think we're finally, I would say in the next 3 or 4 books, we're going to be at a point where it's kind of this, you've got kind of a clean break almost from one era to a new era. And you're going to have new characters. You're going to have new factions. You're going to have new rises and new falls. And that's, you know, what people want. And I think, you know, there's some definitely very progressive things we're doing with the mercenaries and stuff that I'm really excited about.
Awesome. The, you know, looking back, you know, and kind of with the Way of the Clans, you know, series with Robert Thurston, you know, kind of how was, you know, was that something where, you know, you guys were reading that and you're learning about the clans kind of, you know, as you're reading through, or was that kind of a framework that he was given and that you guys all just kind of were like, okay, well, we have enough idea it's coming out? Because it seems like that's almost like the most formative kind of writing in terms of the clans to kind of dictate what you guys are doing later on.
Well, and it's no shot at Bob Thurston. He's a good writer. I read his stories. I didn't know where they were going to go with that. Other than I kind of knew what was going to happen with the Falcon Guard at the pass. I mean, you know, I didn't enjoy those books as much as I thought. And the reason is, yeah, his character of Aiden Pride wasn't somebody that I connected with personally. And I think some fans have had that problem too.
Yeah. And I was definitely, you know, kind of alluding more toward the using that to kind of say, this is how the clans operate. You know, this is kind of, you know, how they raise their warriors and this is the process that they do it.
Yeah. He really took a lot of the stuff right from the Jade Falcon source book and from the Wolf source book and gave it some flesh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it right? Well, it's canon, but I didn't know some of the nuances that he went through, and some of the stuff, if you go back to those books, has been dropped over the years. There's very little things that, you know, he introduces that they disappear, but that happens culturally within the clans too. There's certain ways we say things that have changed over time too. Right. So you just have to, there's little nuances that I think over time kind of faded away. Awesome. You know, the Jade Falcons are a strange clan anyway. I mean, you know, they carry things out to the extreme in everything that they do. And especially when you get to the Dark Ages and the whole Mongol Doctrine, it's just, they're a hard clan to write about where people can identify with them.
Yeah. Well, what's the most exciting for you? Thing for you kind of coming up, like give us that little tease, kind of, you know, some parting thoughts. And
well, we're building up to Hour of the Wolf. Hour of the Wolf will be the book that defines the Oakland era. It puts an end to the Dark Ages and moves us to the Oakland era. So, you know, Divided We Fall starts talking about what's happening with the Dragoons and how that fits in. And the next book I have coming out is a short novel. It's only like 35,000 words, but it's called Rock of the Republic. And that gives you kind of the perspective of what's going on Terra and what's happening, you know, in terms of the Republic of the Sphere. There's another book that will come out before Hour of the Wolf that will tell you what's happening with the clans and give you the clan perspective of what's coming. And it literally ends with them jumping to Terra, and the next, literally the Hour of the Wolf opens with the ships emerging from the jump. Okay. So it's I call it the enchanting prelude to the invasion of the clans. It's that piece that you have, and it's a great character study. There's going to be some new characters coming that I just think are fantastic characters.
Awesome.
And I think the fans are going to like them. You know, but it's Battletech. Some are going to die. Right. Things are going to change, and it's going to be pretty massive and pretty. This is going to be something that changes the Battletech universe in some respects, mm-hmm. and sets a new stage for things going forward. I think the fans are just going to be sitting with their mouths hanging open. Awesome. Some of the Clam fans are going to go, I hate it, you know, don't like it. Some of the Clam fans are just going to be, yes, I've known all along. I've been waiting for this. We're bringing an end to a journey that started in 1989 when the clans invaded. Yeah. Okay. So this is like the end of that construction period. It's like building a giant pyramid and putting the capstone on. That's mm-hmm. it. You know, their whole thing has been, we're on our way to Terra, and it's taken them a century to get there, quite literally in the game terms. And you know, with our fans, it's been this thing hanging out there, and we're actually bringing it to a close, that portion of it, which opens up all sorts of new possibilities and new things. I think the fans are, you know, the anticipation's out there. I think especially with the new Kickstarter and all the clan mechs and stuff, people are going, okay, so how is this going to play out at the end? You know, and it plays out pretty, it's a neat story. It's a neat story. To me, what I've enjoyed about Hour of the Wolf, and John and I are probably going to argue over this, but I wanted to tell the story from a lot of individual soldiers' perspectives. And so there's a lot, you have aerospace fighters, you have warship pilots, you have, you know, tankers on the ground, you have infantry, you know. So let's tell all of, you know, I don't want to just tell the stories of the big characters. I want you'll be able to see the scope of the battle by all the littler characters. And I think each one has their own little arc and where they're going. And some end up dead, some don't. It's just, it's pretty cool. And I have a tank crew in there. That's my favorite pair of characters. Their dialogue is a riot.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, we never see tank crews, you know, in Battletech, not in any depth. And these guys are just funny. They sit and make snarky comments to each other while they're, you know, driving the tank around. And yeah, you know, hey, you didn't drive over that building, why don't you back up and go over it one more time.
Awesome. Yeah, I love it. And I read your, you know, story about the, you know, elementals with Kurita and the shrapnel, which I really enjoyed. It's funny because I had always, you know, I have this kind of story I'd like to, you know, write myself at some point, you know, or kind of a vision, not even so much write it, but I imagine almost like kind of a War of the Worlds kind of radio short of, you know, a lance or something encountering elementals for the first time, and they're starting to swarm, they don't know what's going on, and then suddenly it starts to tear off the cockpit armor, and they're like just like panicking and not going what's on. And so it's kind of read yours, and kind of that was kind of reminded me of that idea that I had, and I really enjoy that story. And so kind of reading for those kind of, you know, the out of the norm stories, I think that's really fun. I love that.
Thank you. I liked it because if you read the original source book on Invading Clans, mm-hmm. there's like three sentences that cover Idlewind. Mm. And you knew Paul Moon. All I knew is Paul Moon was there and they raised the city. And yeah, I was like, it'll be kind of fun to do Paul Moon back when he was the tyrant, you know, yeah. he was the true mm-hmm. believer back then. Yeah. And so to go to Paul Moon and show him like that, that was, you know, where it's like, look, we don't have time for this. We're just going to have right. to level the city. Yeah. You know, like this is moving our this is screwing yeah. up our deadline. Right. And that's kind of the smoke jaguar approach, but it's, you know, you're in a short story format. You don't, it's like, wow, that's a gut punch. Like, yeah. you know, you see his, but you know, elementals ripping tankers out of yeah. tanks and stuff.
Or even just, you know, the image of them emerging from, you know, this fire. And they're just like, what? You know, we were planning dinner, you know, yeah. right now. And all of a sudden these guys are walking out of the fire at us and we're about to die. So yeah, it was a fun story. I really enjoyed it. So.
There's a couple that I've done recently where I've gone back to the original source books and I'm like, there's a one-liner in there and it's like on a planet, you know, it's like, oh, they fought these guys and wiped them out. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's a story. So let's tell that story. And I did one that was Razzlehawk, which I've never written about. Mm-hmm. And they're fun because they're freaking space Vikings, you know? Yeah. I mean, they're like, we're Razzlehawk, we're proud, you know? And they, you know, it was fun to kind of cover a really cool story from their perspective. Yeah. And that I think is always interesting to do.
Well, have you seen that that video short that DC Bruins, I believe is the channel name. It was like it was a half animated short. I think he was saying that the software updated before he could finish it. But have you seen that? It's no. Oh man, I'm so glad I can introduce you to this. All right, so look up tonight. It's Frihet, Frihet, I believe. And it's like a mech warrior story. It's incredible. Actually, maybe we can do a reaction video. Like I'll see if I overlay.
Oh, I'll go take a look at it.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious at this point.
It's beautiful. It's well done, and you'll enjoy it for sure.
I think, you know, there's so much room to play in the BattleTech universe, and mm-hmm. even with the stuff that's been, you know, like I said, you break out invading clans, and you're like, we never covered this.
Yeah.
Let's tell a really cool set of character stories there.
Yeah.
I did one where it's all elementals. They're Jade Falcon elementals on Apollo. And it's called An Eagle Among Falcons. And it's just a really cool little character story about somebody who doesn't necessarily fit in their clan for all the right reasons. You know, and it's how does that person deal with the Jade Falcons, which were, you know, freaking brutal. Jade Falcons were everybody picks on the smoke jaguars, but let's be honest, the Falcons were pretty freaking efficient too.
Yeah, well, you got to look at the origin, you know, that first con, you know, she didn't take any there were no shortcuts for her.
No.
You know, the clan reflects its founder. But awesome. Well, this has been a ton of fun, Blaine. I really appreciate you kind of taking time to talk, and you know, I look forward to sharing this with the community and reading more, and you know, maybe we can connect again later, you know, after that.
Oh, I'm happy to. I always love talking BattleTech, man.
Awesome.
Especially after the books come out, give me a ring.
Cool. I will definitely do so. Yeah, and check out that short. You know,
I will.
You're gonna love it. I'm envious for you of not having seen it before and seeing it for the first time. Awesome. All right.
Cool.
Well, thanks, Blaine. I'll sign off here and take care.
Talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye.
Hey guys, so that's my wrap with Blaine there. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I'm really kind of kicking myself now. I totally should have kind of set up like a little impromptu watch party with Blaine for that fan-made film, that Frihet, a Mech Warrior Story, I believe is the full title, by DC Bruins on YouTube. Definitely check that out if you haven't already. It would have been fun to kind of see Blaine watching that for the first time, but it kind of a little tickles me that at least I kind of put him in that direction since he hadn't seen that before. But kind of back to the topic at hand, if you guys are looking to kind of pick up some of the books, I want to give a quick shout out to Ares Games and Miniatures. I'll put some links down below in the description, but if you're looking to pick up the novels or any kind of BattleTech product, please check them out. They do a great job kind of supporting the BattleTech community. The prices are really good, and shipping is top notch, which is definitely more than you could say about Amazon, which sometimes doubles my packages as soccer balls, it seems like, but everything I've gotten from Ares has been well taken care of, so you can kind of buy that with a little bit of assurance. But I hope you guys are enjoying these
these kind of podcasts, these episodes, whether I'm talking about the trading card game or talking to contributors like Blaine and kind of who knows who else I'm going to be able to get up here in the future. If you want to support kind of this effort and this channel, please check out Renegade HPG on Patreon. Maybe kick in a couple bucks per month. That would really help kind of give me some options just in terms of what I can do with this channel and kind of producing and creating content for you guys to enjoy. But in the meantime, take care. Have a lot of fun with your games, whether you're reading, whether you're playing, whether you're gaming online, whatever it may be. Look forward to catch you guys with the next episode. Bye.